knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight.
I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy and Kansas. Stop it. Andy and Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
Look, my bright spot today is not so much a bright spot as it is a shots fired spot.
Shots fired spot.
Yeah. I'm taking aim at some novelty stuff that I've tried that has been garbage.
I propose we call it Bright Spots Fired.
Bright Spots Fired.
There
Perfect.
We go. Okay.
That is a knockout.
Excellent.
First, Dr. Pepper Strawberry and Cream. Get out.
Ooh.
Not
Strawberry
good.
And Cream? Why?
It seemed like it had potential. I mean, you can't not think, like, maybe I'll try this. And
right. Well, sure, great. Sure.
Strawberries and Cream is an ambitious flavor.
For a Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper has 31 flavors in it, or that's Baskin-Robbins?
That's Baskin-Robbins.
But it has a lot, and I think some of them are, like, cherry and maybe plum or something like that.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or what have you. I feel like strawberry is something that could be blended in there.
Right.
It's overpowering and not good.
I'm going to throw this out, mm-hmm. Okay? I have always thought Dr. Pepper should just be Dr. Pepper because I've never thought about what Dr. Pepper was. You know, like a Coke is, you know, coca leaves or any number of different things. You know, like a cream soda is a cream soda. Dr. Pepper, I don't know what it is.
Well, it's...
It's just Dr. Pepper.
It's this fella got through his post-grad work.
Oh, yeah?
And he decided to make sodas. And he came up with a great recipe. 11 herbs and spices go with, wait, no, that's KFC.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, was that a Hedberg? Was Hedberg's joke the Mr. Pibb joke?
No, it's the Dr. Pepper. Diet Dr. Pepper tastes more like regular Dr. Pepper. That means you fucked up. No, but he also had the Mr. No, who was that?
Mitch Hedberg. I can't remember.
He doesn't even have his degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
More of a Mr. Pibb guy. Oh, boy.
So that Dr. Pepper, not good. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. This applies to this drink and the next one that I got. Is you cannot get just one. You have to get like a 12-pack.
I mean, I hate to say it, but that is how they get you.
It is.
It's how they get you. It is. It is literally how they get
you.
So
I end up with like, okay, now I got to either drink the rest of these shitty drinks or I have to, you know, toss them out or like pour them down the sink so I can recycle the cans or whatever.
Yeah.
But the second one is Coca-Cola Move.
What?
Move.
Is that milk and Coca-Cola?
No, I don't know what it is. It's some. I imagine it's some sort of a like charity kind of thing or whatever. I don't know what it is. It looked like it had a charitable connection to it. I didn't look too deeply into it.
Okay.
But I was out with a friend Matt Riggs. We were at the store and grabbed it because it looked different. And what the fuck is Move flavor?
Yeah, I would. Well, I'm interested. Yeah.
Sure. So he was looking it up on his phone as we were leaving, and he's like, "Ooh, they say it has hints of tobacco." Like. Not a good sign. Nope. Not good.
Hints of tobacco.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know what liquid tobacco would taste like, but it was really more like a pungent gasoline-y coconut.
Gee, that's wow. Yeah,
a gasoline-y coconut.
Coca-Cola Move is better than Coca-Cola Tar. You know, I suppose that's that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
So, okay, new from Coca-Cola Creations, taste Coca-Cola Move, a celebration of transformation. The newest from Coca-Cola Creations was co-created with one of the most daring artists in music today. Who?
Wait. Why would I give a shit what a music artist thinks about soda?
It doesn't say who either. It just says, is it Move? Is that the band? Or is that the artist? I feel like an idiot now, but it doesn't say.
Is that it?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Now I've looked on the page, and the page doesn't even say that. It just says the most daring artist.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. Who would I call the most daring musical artist right now?
Well, they're not brave. Whoever you name isn't brave enough to make a Coca-Cola.
They're not brave enough to put their name on it.
Okay, it looks like it's Rosalia.
Oh, Rosalia. She's great.
Okay.
Yeah, they're really, really good.
I don't know who that is. I don't listen to a lot of music that isn't from 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair.
Old man applesauce over here.
Just sipping on your cottage cheese with the straw.
And complaining about various sodas.
I don't like these sodas. They're not like when I was young.
These newfangled sodas. I blame the kids. Rosalia and her brave sodas. Daring sodas.
Daring sodas. I don't. Here's the problem I have right away.
Sure.
The way you keep saying Coca-Cola move, you know, you cannot, it doesn't roll off the tongue. Coca-Cola Move.
Coke
has
Move
a,
doesn't either.
No, it's a terrible name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. The cans look nice, though.
Well, that's fair.
So what's your bright spot?
My bright spot is a daring musical artist.
Oh, boy.
Brandi Younger just released an album, and as everybody knows...
Younger than who?
Well, the other Brandi. The Brandi with only one name.
The Boy Is Mine Brandi?
Yeah, Brandi.
Okay.
Like everybody, I listen to a lot of jazz harp, and she happens to be a jazz harp virtuoso, and she's put out a jazz hip-hop fusion album featuring a shit ton of harp. It's great.
Nice.
It's fucking great.
I can't say, you know, sometimes I'll say, like, oh, I'm gonna check that out. I'm not going to do
that this time. I mean, honestly, this is one that you should check out. Sometimes when I give you a recommendation and you're like, I'll check that out, and it's not for you. Mm-hmm. This one I actually think you would really like.
Jazz,
it's really
harp,
just chill.
Fusion?
It's just really chill. It's more. It's more like a groove than it is like like bebop. It's more.
But
just
I
grooves.
Kind of would prefer that bebop.
Well, okay, fair.
You know, I don't like chill music because it makes me anxious.
That's fair.
That's why I don't like reggae.
That is a good
too
point.
Chill.
It's too chill.
Yeah,
it's too chill.
Yeah.
Well, there's a 4/4 time signature, so you'll still be all right.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll still be able to jam.
All right.
Yeah,
I might.
I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying that it might be something that you would enjoy.
Okay.
All right.
It's
called Brand New Life.
Personally.
It's Brand New Life.
Sounds good. So, Jordan, today we have got an episode to do. There are some avenues that were went down for this episode that have been fruitless. So Project Camelot tinkering.
Cul-de-sac.
And then I got really, really excited about this. There's an episode of the Jim Baker Show about the scourge of DMT. All the kids are doing it.
All right. Let's, okay.
But I was watching it, and I'm like, I don't know. This isn't worth covering. It's worth mentioning here, like this.
Sure.
But the episode itself isn't really worth covering, and Jim Baker wasn't like in the part that I was watching. His other people, like Mondo de la Vega.
Okay.
And, like, the other... the team.
Yeah.
The zoo crew.
Yeah.
Complaining about all the kids doing DMT.
Yeah, the episode has to back up the laugh of just knowing the episode existed, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if we're not going to do better than Jim Baker's complaining about DMT, end of sentence, then no point. No point in doing it.
Totally. That's where, like, the Courts of Heaven was really like, that crossed that line.
Raised the bar beyond. Yeah.
The reality of what he's talking about is funnier than the concept.
Yeah.
Whereas the DMT is taking over the country. Not really better than just the name.
Nope.
So we have an episode we're going to do where we're in the past. We're going to be talking about February 4th, 2004. And there's an important reason.
Okay.
Because we get an interesting guest.
All right.
Here today. And want to look into this a little bit. Analyze it.
Is it the Dershowitz? Has Dersh showed up in the present and the past simultaneously? Are you a witch?
No. Not that much of a witch.
Okay.
But it is someone who is related to a famous person.
our sweet spot.
Spoiler alert. So we'll get down to business on this, but before we do, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, James, if you're listening, it's Nat. It'll be okay one day at a time. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
That one is not, that is a recent one, because I saw that come in and I was like, maybe this is time sensitive.
Maybe we need to,
maybe this can't wait
maybe
for
we'll
5 months from now.
Yeah.
Next, It took me way too long to realize you're saying banned, B-A-N-N-E-D, and not banned, B-A-N-D, dot video. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next. Happy birthday, Rachel. Now you're a wonk, unless you're already a wonk, in which case congrats on being a double wonk. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Double wonk.
Double wonk.
Next, Spartacus from Lazy Town. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I got Taylor Swift tickets and a hammer fetish. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And we got a couple of technocrats in the mix, Ooh. Jordan. So first, super trans vitality. It's not just chemical castration. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And... uh-oh. It's December 16th, and Chad just wanted to see how long a technocrat shout-out takes. Thank you so much. They're now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk. I have risen above my enemies. I might quit tomorrow, actually. I'm just going to take a little breaky now. A little breaky for me. And then we're going to come back, and I'm going to start the show over. But I'm the devil. I gotta be taken off here. I did all this. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. Fuck you. I got plenty of words for you, but at the end of the day, fuck you and your New World Order, and fuck the horse you rode in on, and all your shit. Maybe today should be my last broadcast. I mean, maybe I'll just be gone a month, maybe 5 years. Maybe I'll walk out of here tomorrow, and you never see me again. That's really what I want to do. I never want to come back here again. I apologize to the crew and the listeners yesterday that I was legitimately having breakdowns on air. I'll be better tomorrow.
Nah. Nah, he's not.
Yeah, no.
But that gives you some idea. We've got a backlog. Got a backlog.
I like the idea now of us selling ad space, right? But instead only doing it in the same slot as like a technocrat drop whenever we get to it.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a while.
It'll be a while, but we'll sell you that spot.
Yeah, if y'all, if anybody wants to expedite a shout out for any particular reason, they can email knowledgefight@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And that will be able to help with
we
that.
We try to
but
be.
Otherwise, I mean, it's just that inbox is the other inbox is a mess, not much I can do about that.
We try and mix up with the, you know, the everybody who's been there deserves it, there, and they get their space, and if you need it sooner, then we'll accommodate. We're accommodating people. We're not bad people.
Yeah, and that way you can also just, like, you don't even have to donate. If you want a shout-out, you can just con Jordan.
100% could. Somebody was like, oh, they sent
no
proof,
big deal.
And I was like, no, I don't even want that. Yeah. I don't want that in my mind. You just say you are, I believe you are.
We are bad at this. So we start off the episode here on February 4th, and we immediately hear about who's on the docket.
Hello, my friends. It is Wednesday, the 4th of February, 2004. And my goodness, you've tuned into a very important show today. We have the father of Mel Gibson, an expert on the New World Order, joining us in the second hour, Hutton Gibson, to talk about, well, a speech he gave a few weeks ago to the American Free Press about secession from the Union, the national draft, what's happening in Iraq, the New World Order, and much more.
Pretty sweet.
Is there a reason that anybody should be talking to his dad other than that he's Mel Gibson's dad?
The Passion of the Christ is coming out.
Right.
And so Mel Gibson would never come on Alex's show.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Although.
I mean, today.
I've said that about Yay.
We've gone
wrong.
Back and forth. Yeah.
So who knows? But I think that Alex couldn't get Mel Gibson, but he could get dad.
Sure.
So there we go.
All right.
We've talked about this before, but Hutton Gibson is a very explicit anti-Semite, and Alex has no excuse not to know that. He's been pretty public about not only his belief that the Holocaust was, quote, maybe not all fiction, but most, but also that he believes that the Jews are behind the plot to bring in a one-world government. So when Alex interviews him, pretending he's an expert on the New World Order and all that shit, it's important to remember that whether or not he's explicit about it on air, everything Hutton is saying is an allegation of an anti-Jewish conspiracy. There are really only two options about this. Either Alex knows this and agrees with Hutton, or he doesn't care that he's helping spread really vicious anti-Semitism because he's being allowed to talk to a celebrity's dad, and that's pretty exciting for him. It's worth noting that the American Free Press is a white supremacist Holocaust-denying rag run by Willis Cardo, but that the speech Hutton gave wasn't to them. Alex is saying that because he doesn't really know
Oh,
what he's talking
about. Okay.
They just reported on the speech.
Okay.
The actual speech was at the We the People conference, which was full of sovereign citizens and a bunch of other varieties of bigot. The editor of the Council of Conservative Citizens also spoke, which you may remember was the outlet that published fraudulent race crime statistics, which were the impetus for Dylann Roof's racist mass murder.
Yeah.
So all in the mix.
Yeah. Good. Just a real melange of awful.
Yeah. I couldn't find the text or, you know, video of his speech, but I did find a write-up about the event, and apparently people were chanting Hutton for president.
Great. Lindbergh.
If Lindbergh was more hateful. So there's another guest on this episode. It isn't just neo-Nazi celebrity dad.
Okay, all right.
There's another guy.
Well, that's good.
We have the former Secretary of Defense. And, of course, up until about a year ago, he was also the head of German technology, the technology minister, one of the top positions in Germany. Joining us, as you'll go over the evidence of the U.S. government carrying out September 11th. You see, anybody with a brain knows this, and more people worldwide are saying the world is round, not flat. And again, we are the Magellans of the 21st century. We tell the truth. God. We face the facts.
So, yeah, Alex has Andreas von Bülow coming on.
I appreciate the greatness of the Magellan comparison, because he does not know that Magellan died before he ever actually completed that trip. And it was actually a person of color who did successfully go around the world.
I think Alex makes that metaphor twice on this episode.
Smart.
So it's pretty interesting booking that Alex has someone who is actually in the German government coming onto the show. But he's doing a lot of exaggerating with this resume. Von Bülow was the Minister for Research and Technology from 1980 to 1982. And previous to that, he'd been the Parliamentary State Secretary in the Ministry of Defense from 1976 to 1980. That's not the equivalent of our Secretary of Defense, which is what Alex says
right.
It is, but it is a high-ranking position.
Okay.
So there's a Minister of Defense, and then there are two Parliamentary State Secretaries beneath them, and von Bülow was one of them.
Okay.
He's also not been in government up to approximately a year before this, as Alex is saying. He's like, oh, he's just got out of government.
Yeah.
It had been almost a decade since he'd left the Bundestag in 1994. Alex wants to make it appear that he was in government way more recently, because it's important to create the image that he was in an official position around the time of 9/11, so his claims have more authority.
Yeah.
In reality, he just wrote a book called The CIA and September 11th, which is kind of shit. It's more or less a compilation of the kind of unsourced rumors and theories that fly around on Alex's show, which von Bülow then insists that the U.S. government has a responsibility to disprove. The burden of proof is on them from the things that I'm saying.
Yeah, I was a little bit mystified by the credits, the CV that we were given up top, because in my mind, a recent former German defense minister showing up on InfoWars to claim that the United States did 9/11. That's going to be a newsworthy event.
It would be, were it. What happened?
That would be something that goes on TV.
Yeah, and get this. Yeah. We're not even going to listen to any of his interview. Because it is so boring.
Of course.
It is really just like them ping-ponging back weird trivia about 9/11 conspiracies.
Oh, no. It's just a fact-off.
Yeah, and but it's all the same shit. It's all the stuff that's just in blogs and sure. Like... Von Bülow doesn't have, like, some kind of, the German government has these documents that I'm bringing to the front.
Or right.
He doesn't have any information.
Right.
He just read some dumb blogs.
Right.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing that this helps us remember.
Yeah.
Just because you have a great resume doesn't mean you're bringing a lot to the table.
That's true.
Because think about it. Like, somebody 5 years from now or whatever on, some foreign radio show could have Ted Cruz on.
Sure.
And, like, he has a legitimate, quite impressive government resume if you're just looking at the facts.
Yeah. And he's also batshit insane. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you know Andreas von Bülow isn't the same thing?
Yeah, you know, it does feel like sometimes...
Steve Pachenik was in the government.
I know, but that's the problem. It feels all too often like we need a better way to avoid saying hindsight is 2020. You know, like, oh, we just hire people like Steve Pachenik. You know, like, no, we got to have
it. But every place does that.
Sure.
Every office will have some misfires with employment and the people they hire. Same thing at any retail outlet.
That's fair.
You're going to get some weirdo.
That's fair. But nobody working at the Gap has killed Aldo Moro.
You don't know that?
I
Did they have any gaps in Italy?
Is Steve Fajetic
were members
at
the of the
Gap
Red
now?
Brigade? Were they employees of the Gap? They
Il
fall
Gap,
into
Il
it.
Il Gappe was the original.
Yeah, we don't know. It wasn't in the documentary.
It wasn't. That's true.
So Alex takes some calls because he got to fill some time.
Sure.
And he gets a call from a guy, and I thought he had a really interesting question, and that is, what is the military-industrial complex?
That is an interesting question.
Especially for someone like Alex, who should have a good answer.
Yeah.
Basically, what is the military-industrial complex?
Okay, thanks for the call. That's a really good question, Bob.
I bet we answer it.
The military-industrial complex that Dwight D. Eisenhower talked about in his farewell address of 1960... In his farewell address, he talked about how the corporations that had grown up through World War II and the Korean War, through the funding, through the hundreds of millions of dollars of funding, had taken over almost all of the programs, research programs, universities, had bought up most of the private inventions and inventors and laboratories, and that they had centralized it. Control of the brain trust of Western civilization in just a handful of companies. And he said that that stifled competition. He said that that centralized power, and that because they now own the universities and because the military-industrial complex was buying up ABC and CBS and NBC, which was happening right at that
time. I'm sorry? Can they do that?
They were going to control all the information, all the technology. And that it was, and by the way, we've aired the speech here before, that it was a foregone conclusion that martial law would be set up, because throughout history, when military industrial complexes, which they had in Germany and England, got big enough, they would always take total control.
So what, have you ever listened to that whole speech or read it?
No.
But you know, like, some of the hits.
Yeah. I got the idea.
So all of that Alex said is made up.
that makes more sense. Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. And absolutely is not what Eisenhower was saying in his farewell address.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is just fabricated from thin air, and some of it is just flagrant misrepresentations of things that Eisenhower did say. One of the more basic misrepresentations Alex is making is that he's combining two things that Eisenhower was presenting as two separate thoughts. Alex is combining them into one.
Okay.
There's concerns about the military-industrial complex,
sure.
And then there's concerns about inventors. They're separate.
Okay.
Eisenhower brings up that there are new threats and stressors that risk throwing the country out of balance and says, quote, threats new in kind or degree constantly arise. I mentioned two only. Then he brings up the two, which are the military-industrial complex and the way that innovation and technological advancement had become heavily reliant on funding from government programs. These are two separate things that Alex has turned into one, which is not supported by the text.
Right.
According to Eisenhower, the military-industrial complex is the state of affairs we found ourselves in, where the United States had a, quote, permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. It's the product of being aware that we need to have weapons ready when the next war breaks out, and the industry that makes that possible, the combining of the two, and the influence that is gained from
it. Yeah. I mean, it's not a long leap to go, okay, this company makes bullets. They make their money from bullets. It is in their best interest for more bullets to be needed. If that's the case, then maybe their advice on foreign policy isn't going to be the best.
He doesn't even get that clear, but you can see shades of that, for sure. He doesn't talk about the military-industrial complex buying up the media. He doesn't say that we're heading to martial law. He doesn't even say that these other countries like Germany and England had military-industrial complexes that led them to martial law. All that is just stuff Alex has projected onto the text because it fits into the larger conspiracy that he wants to push. It's important to constantly be reminded of this dynamic, the way that Alex abuses primary sources, and how little foundation there is for, like, his most basic concepts.
Yeah.
It's really a house built on sand, but the sand is Alex's imaginary sand.
Yeah.
So it's even worse.
I mean, it's like he's mistaking crossing the Rubicon for the military-industrial complex. Like Caesar owned Sword Theon. and had to like increase production of swords. So then, you know, the standing army, and then he finally was just like, fuck it, I got to take over this whole sword manufacturing operation. Mm-hmm. And then he becomes Caesar. That's how it worked, right?
Well, the real problem was that he couldn't get a job at the Gap.
Oh, that's what caused him to get sword
theon.
Il Gappe!
So, yeah, I just think it's interesting that, like, you have these things that are, like, really foundational and, like, bottom of the base, the keystone yeah. type ideas, like yeah. the military-industrial complex. That should be something that Alex gets a call, like, what is it? And he's able to give a concise answer instead of rambling basically lies about yeah. Eisenhower's speech.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, but I feel, you know, it is like, it's so much the secret to being able to lie about everything is if you don't know the actual fundamental problems, you know, who cares if you're making up bullshit like three or four steps down the road? Dude doesn't even know what the military industrial complex is.
Or maybe he does, but he knows that the answer doesn't serve his larger conspiracy
yeah.
in a way that, like, the bluffing of it would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Basically, I think he'd probably be a pretty interesting improviser if he wasn't such a malicious shithead.
And
but then again, a lot
a
of improvisers
partner,
are malicious
though.
Shitheads.
Well, most improvisers, yeah.
But you could do solo improv.
You can do solo improv, and Alex could do it. He would be entertaining because mm-hmm. we know that because that is his show. It's a solo improv show for about 3 hours.
Yeah, but the suggestion is always hate with anger. It's no good.
I'm looking for a different person to hate from the crowd.
So, Jordan, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What year did you graduate from high school?
2005.
So it's after this.
Yes, it is
this
after
this. This is 2004.
I was 17.
See, I dropped out.
Oh, no, I was 16.
I would have graduated in 2002.
Ah.
So I predate this.
Yes.
This warning that Alex has about what's going to happen with high school graduates.
Okay.
And people who are on their way to graduation.
All right. So I am at risk.
You lived through this.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
You lived through this.
Okay.
Don't you remember?
No. I'm just catching up my memory.
Listen to what happened to you.
Okay.
Now, the New York Times reported the feds, if your child's going to graduate from high school, will have to serve their last 2 years upwards of 10 hours a week at a Homeland Security computer in your home.
What?
Paid for by the government. Your
tough.
Child will have to sit there and watch surveillance cameras around the country and report to police what they see. And quote, in case your child gets lazy, the government is going to superimpose fake terrorists so clear they can randomly insert fake video like the Running Man. And then your child, and old folks love to do this too, as part of the new national draft, but it says to start out the high schools, will have to call the police, and let's say you're in Texas, you'll be tattling on somebody in New Jersey, crime, terrorism, everything, just terrorism and crime, and to make sure your child's on their toes, your young person, they'll hit the button to a larger committee, they'll look at the images, hit the command of the police will have a code number and go, no, this was just a drill. and that's so sophisticated, I could talk for an hour about what that means.
I'm sure you could, solo improv style. But yeah, that must have been tough. How was it when you had to do those 10
okay.
hours a week at the
right.
Homeland Security computer that was installed
right.
in your home?
Here's the problem.
Did you ever get tricked by these fake terrorist attacks that they superimposed
the
on there to make sure you
my
weren't
code,
being lazy?
My codes weren't very great. Here's the problem, all right? Here's the problem with an old person, or at this time, no, he's only in his like early 20s.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think, 2004 would have been... So he's 10 years older than me.
Right.
So yeah, he would have been in his late 20s.
Yeah, he would have been in his late 20s, right?
Yeah.
So people weren't as internet sophisticated at that time. Like, my generation was just at the end of the generation that was born with computers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If at that time the government had installed a computer in every teenage boy's home, they would have created a race of super masturbators that could last for 10 hours a day.
No, it's...
Like, that's insane how stupid that is.
It's not connected to that internet. It's connected to the internet portal of
sure.
security cameras all over the world.
Sure. Listen, the people at the SEC are watching porn all the time. I don't know. I don't fucking know, you know?
I think, first of all, cost prohibitive.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely cost prohibitive.
This is so silly.
Yes. the logistics of it are impossible to imagine.
But it is funny to imagine being in 2004, being one of Alex's listeners and being like, I will never allow one of those computers in my home.
So who comes in to install it? Is it the G-Men? Is it like the FBI from the 1960s? Like, yeah. Come on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're here to install your government computers. Yeah.
And you're going to go to the clink if you if you tamper with this computer at all. It says government property.
Right.
It's like a mailbox.
Right. Maybe you shouldn't have given government property to a 16-year-old boy. I'll just throw that out at you. Mm. If it breaks, it's on you.
You're going to juvie. And don't masturbate on it.
Okay. All right. Okay. So after this happens, after the G-Men come and install your computer, hook up a landline, do the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, because back then it wouldn't have been like wireless.
Nope.
It would have been plugged in. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what you would have heard all day, every day.
You would have need a dedicated phone line in each person's house or else their phone wouldn't work.
Their phone wouldn't work. Yeah. Mm. The internet of the past was wild, man.
Was that, I don't know. That seems like right on the line. Because I feel like that was definitely the case when I was like 16, 17.
Sure.
But I feel like it might have gotten a little bit better by 2004. Maybe not. I don't know. It's hard to figure out when those lines were.
Yeah, I can't remember. I want to say that dial-up had passed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that we were fully connected wire, not dial-up. Mm-hmm. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Either way, this is dumb. And it's just delightful. I like it. I like these kinds of things on Alex's show when he's describing these, like, what's going to happen. It's like 20 years later, looking back, like, it's so stupid.
There's something to be said about his prompts for imagination.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They're scary.
Yep.
Sort of.
Yeah.
So anyway, Alex gets another call, and this guy, I guess he blew his friend's mind with a little fact.
All right.
Let's talk to Larry in Iowa.
Hello, Alex.
Good to talk to you, Larry.
Yeah, I'm trying to wake up a few people and just casual conversations and
didn't work.
And I think one of the best ways is
system of a down.
Let me preface what I'm saying by saying that I have nothing against Mexicans.
Cool.
My
shouldn't have said that.
Brother is half Mexican, but this is something that affects
we don't talk about that
everybody
half.
Because it's they're around us. In our communities, and this guy did not believe that there's a Social Security office in Mexico City. And, I was trying to tell him about the eventual Pan-American Union, and that this is one of the facts that are one of the building blocks to that eventuality.
Yeah, it's public.
And I'm a little nervous here, so...
So he denied that, of course.
Well, he wanted proof, which is, encouraging, and...
Well, you go to a search engine and you type in Mexicans to be paid Social Security in Mexico, and about 500 mainstream news articles will pop up.
There aren't any Social Security Administration offices outside the U.S.
Nah.
However, there are many U.S. citizens who are entitled to Social Security benefits who live outside of the United States.
Yeah.
So there is a need to accommodate these people who live abroad.
Yeah.
That's why at many U.S. embassies, there's a federal benefits unit, which houses the Office of Earnings and International Operations. There are actually three such offices in Mexico, two in consulates and one at the embassy. This has nothing to do with giving non-U.S. citizens benefits, but it has the air of being just suspicious enough that presented with no context, or even better, presented with fake context, it could convince people like this caller that there's something nefarious going on. It's really sad how uncurious these InfoWars listeners are, all while considering themselves the real truth seekers.
Yeah.
Like, ask yourself for a second, why would there need to be people who have some involvement with Social Security in foreign countries at, say, an embassy?
No.
Or something like that. Why would that be necessary? Obviously, American citizens live outside the United States.
I didn't say anything because I was waiting for it to be true or not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know. But when he said, did you know there's Social Security offices in Mexico City? I was like, yeah, of course there are. U.S. citizens live everywhere, and they also still get U.S. citizen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're not, even if you're applying to be a citizen, and you said, why not go there? I mean, it makes perfect sense.
There's all kinds of services for citizens at embassies and such. It's an important part of Being able to be in other countries.
I mean, yeah. What's the point of an embassy if it doesn't do the things that you would need it to do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly how, you know, like other countries, their exact, you know, governmental structure is.
Sure.
But I would assume that some of those things are available at other countries' embassies within the United States, yeah, too. So, like, I don't know. This is all just really stupid. And I think that is indicative of laziness.
Yeah.
On the part, lazy thinking, not asking the second question.
Mm-hmm.
If there is this embassy there or this Social Security thing there,
sure,
why is that? Because you ask yourself that question, and then mm-hmm. immediately you have conspiracy theorists running in with the answer, and that is because they're trying to turn the United States, Canada, and Mexico into the same country so they can give Mexican people Social Security, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then you accept that as an answer because you're lazy, and
right,
you don't want to think through the second question of, like, it's just because there are people who live abroad.
Yeah, I mean, my mind goes like this, right? So Social Security offices in the U.S. and other countries, right? People need benefits there. Now I think, okay, if other countries do that, who has the best benefits? And now I'm thinking we should knock over the Finnish embassy, all right? See, they've got to be keeping shit tons of cash in there. Everybody knows that.
Look out, Finland.
We're coming for your embassies, man.
Yeah. So I just think it's laziness.
Yeah.
And that makes this ironic.
Well, you know what? I would suggest that you not cast your pearls before swine.
Right.
I would move on. I've got a sneaking suspicion. You can give that guy all the news articles you want. He'll come up with new excuses to be lazy.
Yeah.
See, well, good propaganda just plays to our own laziness.
You said it.
Yep.
You are very correct, Alex.
Wow.
And that is the reason you have a career.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is, oh my God.
That is cynical.
If he is ever put into prison, that should be on a loop. Uh-huh. He should have to listen to that on a loop. Yeah. Over and over and over again.
Good propaganda is predatory upon people's laziness.
Yep, that makes perfect sense.
You jerk.
You asshole.
So now we get to Hutton Gibson showing up. I gotta say, these dudes have no chemistry.
Mm.
It's tough to listen to.
Yeah.
Because he's like an 80-something-year-old racist.
Sure.
And I think that he knows enough. Like, he's friends with Alex. At least, like, they've talked a couple times at least before.
Yeah.
So I think that there's an awareness that, like, you can't yell about the Jews on his show.
Sure, sure.
That's going to play poorly.
Right,
there's
right.
There's an illusion that we're trying to maintain here.
We got 20 years before we can just out and out say it
and
whenever we want.
You have to be yay famous.
You got to be yay famous.
Mel Gibson's dad.
No. Yay's dad isn't doing it, you know, no, that kind of thing. Yeah.
No, you have to be the celebrity yourself if you want to talk about loving Hitler. You can't be a family member.
No.
But, yeah, it's really tough because there's long, like, pauses, kind of, like, jaunty back and forth. Not jaunty back and forth.
No.
Staccato back
Stilted.
And forth. Yeah. It's
yeah.
just not good to listen to.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hutton wants to secede from the U.S.
Sure.
The thing here is that secession was treated by the founding fathers. They left it in there.
Did
and
they?
The fact that it did not succeed in 1861-65 is merely a matter of who had more banks and who had more soldiers and more munitions. It was perfectly legal. And Lincoln at one time imprisoned the Maryland legislature so it couldn't secede. anyway...
Great story, dude.
Did you know that the week before 9/11... New Hampshire and two other states had their counties and their selectmen preparing to withdraw from the Union. The counties from the states under their Article 10 right to revolt in that particular state. And then suddenly the attacks took place and that didn't happen. Arizona almost passed a law. It passed committee to pull out of the Union if, quote, a new world order is declared or if gun confiscation begins. If the federal government goes bad, it is our right, it is our duty to pull out of the Union.
And it's going to start with the selectmen.
I mean...
the omnibudsmans.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay.
Yeah, did you know that right before 9/11, three states were going to secede and then the attack happened and it didn't go through?
I did not know that that was on the table.
I didn't know that that was a motive, because clearly that's the reason you bring this up, is like that's why they did 9/11
right,
in order to stop New Hampshire from seceding.
Right. Well, I mean, New Hampshire was going to secede in 9/11. 99, but then Y2K happened. Mm-hmm. Then they were picking it back up. Then 9/11 happened. Mm. They took a year off. Iraq War happened. You know, you're
then
still
the
just
bank. 2008, 2009 recession.
Yeah, yeah. Every time you try and secede, you just have to keep putting it off for a new emergency.
And as we all know, this is one truism from history.
Sure.
As go the New Hampshire selectmen, so goes the country.
So goes the country.
The wisest elders of our country. They know everything. They're always on the right side of history. The selectmen of New Hampshire.
I've always appreciated those dumb, like, legality of secession arguments or whatever. Like, at a certain point, if you have seceded, the laws are different now. There's no laws.
Yeah.
Nobody has laws
there's
over you.
There's rules that you can't assault somebody, but if they hit you, then it's time to throw hands.
Yeah,
it's
on. It's
the
a
rules
different country.
Different.
We've entered
a different state of play.
Yeah, we're at war between two countries. There's no legal or illegal here.
It's almost academic and for people to discuss later, like the legality of, you know, starting an internal civil war.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Because, like, in the moment, It's not going to matter.
Yeah, I'm suing Jefferson Davis to stop the war.
Uh-huh.
That'll do it. It's illegal.
Yeah. That'll catch them up in all kinds of costly litigation.
Yeah, exactly. They want to start the war, but it's.
Yeah, I mean, look, he can say that there's more bankers and more guns and stuff, and that's what swayed the, but also public support.
Sure. I mean,
and I mean, if they're
of different countries' support,
if there are people who are, like, you know, really into God's will and stuff like that, you might say that the fact that the Union won might have been the message.
Yeah,
maybe they had divine. I don't know. I don't think that, but it might be. It should be persuasive for them.
I mean, you know, when we think about the Civil War, we always like to talk about, oh, us, you know. But I think a lot of the times we forget that one of the big things is the South didn't get many loans. Mm. They didn't get as many loans from foreign countries because there were slavers.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't like to loan money to slavers.
Yeah.
It's bad.
There was another caller who brings up that, like, everybody wants to say that the Civil War was about slavery, but it was about the South's wanting to determine their own future.
Yeah, own slaves.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm listening. I'm like,
you've totally got that.
You've just rephrased this. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Alex has looked into Hutton Gibson, and he wants the audience to know that he's super credible.
We're talking to Hutton Gibson, who has been conscious of the New World Order for 50 years. And you can see the effect of his knowledge, his information, which I've checked out and is extremely accurate, on his son and the fruits of his labor with Braveheart and the Patriot and now the Passion.
If Alex has checked out Hutton Gibson's stuff and he thinks it's all accurate, he's a Holocaust denier.
Yeah. Full stop.
And if he's not, then I would think that when you're presenting this, that Hutton Gibson's information is really, you know, solid. He knows what he's talking about. It's accurate.
Yeah.
Except for the part where he says that the Holocaust was mostly fake.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You would at the very least have to point that one out.
Yeah.
But the problem is when you point that one out, all of a sudden I think about the rest of what he has to say and I go, I don't care.
Yeah. That's a difficulty.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Alex doesn't bring it up.
Tends to be.
And because he wants to launder people like this to his audience.
Normally you say, like, oh, look, follow my information. You can see the notes and shit. But if you're talking about Hutton Gibson being like, everything he says is accurate, if somebody follows up for 2 seconds, they're going to be like, oh, you're right. The Holocaust didn't happen.
Yeah, you're gonna immediately find that. He's not like pretty cagey about this.
No.
So, I mean, if Alex has looked into him at all, he knows this stuff.
And yeah.
I guess that's just what he wants his audience to think is accurate.
Yeah, I mean, he has a metaphorical swastika on his forehead.
So Alex also wants secession, it turns out.
Sure.
We're going to be talking today about secession from the Union, how it's a good thing, and I agree it needs to happen by as many states as possible because this is an illegitimate government in Washington. Then we'll get into the national draft and the war in Iraq and a little bit into the Passion as well because Hutton has been blessed enough to see it months ago, and I can't wait till I get to see it in theaters in a few weeks when it opens.
I just don't understand. I don't understand how you can live as an open secessionist for this long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Move.
Pick it up. Either hurry it up or get out.
Yes. You think that this is an illegitimate government from 2004 onward, yeah, and obviously before that. So shut the fuck up with your opinions about the way things are going.
Love it or leave it.
I don't mean it. I know. I don't think you have to love it or leave it.
No.
But you have to secede or leave it.
Yes, exactly. You have to leave it or leave it.
Yeah.
Leave it or shut up.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Here's the thing. I'm fine with secession. Fine. Whatever. I don't care about borders or any of that shit like that. But at no point in time has anybody given me any, like, here's what we do after secession that isn't more insane than what we're doing now.
Well, I can tell you exactly what the idea is, essentially.
Well, right. You can tell me what the idea they have of it.
That's
is.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's that you break up the union.
Yep.
And then states reconstitute their own government.
Right.
And essentially you'd want to end up with a smaller country that is a white nationalist state.
Right.
You basically just want the Confederacy to have succeeded.
Right.
That's what they're talking about when they talk about secession.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, they want the South to rise again.
Yes. Yeah. In order to create an environment where... white interests are the only things that dictate policy, that dictate how society is ordered.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's why they don't talk about what happens next.
See, here's the problem, right? I feel like if we gave them cram them all into a small space, that's fine. I mean, again, I'm fine with that. If everybody who wants a white nation wants to take a section of Texas near the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know why, but that seems like the right spot.
Mm.
Fucking put a big wall around that. We'll be fine.
I see some problems coming from that.
I can see that too.
Yeah.
As I'm saying this, I'm starting to see some issues here. Again, this is why secession doesn't work.
You're not expected to have like fully thought out things that you say.
I just started saying secession and here we go.
Yeah.
Let's give white nationalists part of Texas is where I go from secession.
Yeah. Alex should have less secession on his mind and start watching Succession. I've never seen an episode. I don't know if it's good. I have no idea.
What in the world is that? What did you just do?
Isn't that show?
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah.
I just haven't heard you do a stop talking about secession. Start talking about succession. All right. Hey.
I think Alex maybe has some thoughts about that show. Everyone on Twitter seems to.
Yeah.
I've never seen an episode.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's about. I don't know who's on it.
You're good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So Alex gives Hutton a little bit of a pump up here.
Okay.
But he can only speak in cliche.
Those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. In the beginning, a patriot is a scarce man, hated and feared. In time, when his cause succeeds, the timid join him because then it costs nothing to be a patriot. And a real patriot for this republic is Hutton Gibson.
Yeah, he's a real patriot.
Was he reading off a quote book?
I don't know. I think he got his improv suggestion was only speaking cliche.
I like it.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, like, if you're listening to this, you would have to assume, like, Alex knows his stuff.
Yeah.
If you like Alex, you would think that.
Yeah.
And he thinks that Hutton Gibson is one of the great patriots.
One of the greats.
In the United
States. One of the greatriots.
Who's been on this tip for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and you look him up, and you're like, damn, I guess Alex really wants me to discover that the Jews are the problem. But he doesn't want to say it on air. Obviously, he doesn't want to, like... you know, ruin his career, get kicked off the air. He must actually believe that, but he keeps it real crypto. That's the conclusion you would come away from it if you took the second step and looked into what Hutton Gibson is about.
100%.
And you'd also get the sense that Alex is really mad at the Catholic Church, because that's the other stuff that Hutton Gibson gets into.
Yeah, sure.
But not for the same reasons as you.
No, obviously.
Yeah, it's
obviously.
Because they stopped hating Jews at a certain point.
I was going to say, yeah.
It's Vatican II
stuff. Vatican II was the way, that's where it went all wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So that's what you would discover, and you'd be like, hey, that Alex thinks that's pretty fucking awesome. I guess this is what the show is actually about, because it kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, that is such a two-step laundering that is so simple and effective.
Yeah.
You know, it happens daily.
Plausibly deniable.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it happens daily on so many different shows everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly.
Yep.
Yep.
So Hutton is also apparently involved in some moves to help get the Bible back into schools.
Coca-Cola moves?
No.
Oh.
Although. No.
He was a visionary artist.
He died before Coca-Cola 2 came out.
Okay.
So I can't pin it on him.
Vatican 2, Coca-Cola 2.
He's getting Coke. Not Coke. He's getting the Bible back into schools. So here's a little clip about that.
You know, Hutton, before we go to these calls, you've been taking action for decades. And you've got a great newsletter. You've got a great documentary where you go into the corruption in the Catholic Church. You do such great work. At the same time, Hutton, you're also involved with Pastor Butch Paw and others. 30-plus states are already putting Bibles back in schools. How many people knew that? This great literary work, even if they say you can't have religion in the schools, they put Harry Potter and humanism in there. But
they just put the Quran in there.
They make the kids in California worship Allah and the five pillars. That's mainstream news.
Mainstream news.
I remember.
They force your children in public schools to be convert to Islam.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. I'm happy
that's
to
part
have...
of that's part of what happens with the government computer in your home.
Yeah, exactly.
It also subtly teaches you Islam.
Listen. Everybody's fine with the Bibles being in schools. It is not the Bibles existing in a school that is the problem.
Texts being available for people in a library, that doesn't really make...
I've got like three Bibles. I've got two versions of the Quran. Mm-hmm. I've got the fucking Upanishads.
Yeah.
As many literary books as the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, go for it.
It was great to have access to a lot of that stuff, particularly in high school, because I was able to actually understand a lot more of what I was reading. But having those resources there is I don't think anyone is opposed to, or even back in 2004, evangelizing and such. The issue.
I would be stoked to have any conversation that you have with somebody about religion in a school. You should have a Bible with you. I don't want people like trying to give me off the dome quotes. No,
Alex tries that.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't work well.
That's bad.
Yeah. One of the classes that I took in high school that I really loved was Classical Ideas in World Religion. Mm-hmm. It was a great class.
Yeah.
Great class.
Yeah.
Solid class.
Yeah. I recommend people read holy books.
So, Alex, I think the word of the day is obsequious.
That's a good word.
He is treating Hutton Gibson like a founding father.
Okay.
It's ridiculous.
I thought you meant he was using it, and no. I was like,
he's
wow.
Being
it. I was surprised.
It's over the top.
Yeah.
It's just nonsense.
Hutton, it shows what we can do if we're straight and strong and upright, and your life has really been a testament to that. You have done so much through your life to enrich our lives. And it's so exciting. We got a bunch of phone calls here, Hutton. Anything else you'd like to go over before we go to the calls?
No, I don't think so. Just we have to do something about this government. And if it goes, the Supreme Court goes with it, the Congress goes with it, the Executive Department goes with it, the Treasury, everybody else. The whole thing goes. We don't have to worry about them anymore. We set up separate. That's the way they started. And then gang together when they're out of the way.
And, we have to dare to think like that. We have to make that decision and start pushing for it, setting up committees of correspondence in all 50 states to move to restore the republic. Hutton, in the past...
Okay.
Yeah, there's
that
no
was
response.
Weird. All right.
It's just, like, hanging sentences. And it's just... The vibe is not good. It's tired.
Hutton, you've enriched our lives so much.
How?
You've made me feel like the Holocaust didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Gibson was in a couple good movies.
Sure.
I really like Braveheart.
Yeah.
Freedom! That really inspired
Lethal
me.
Lethal Weapon, pretty good.
Yeah, he was good. He was crazy. He was like, I'll jump with you. Mm-hmm.
Daddy's Home. Wasn't he in that?
I don't know. I don't know Mel Gibson movies.
Wasn't he? I feel like that was a recent one.
Oh, I don't know.
So, look, was he in Succession?
He might be.
I haven't seen it.
I don't know.
He might as well be.
I don't know.
So you have one last clip, because like I told you, Andreas von Bülow's interview is a zero.
Yeah.
It's remarkable to me the way that you have something that on paper is big.
Yeah.
Much like with the Jim Baker episode about DMT.
Yeah, sure.
Just the headline of it, pretty
huge.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The reality of it, not so great.
Ooh.
So you have a guy who was in the German government coming on. Headline is great.
Yeah.
The reality of it stinks. And there's nothing to really be gained from listening to it, except for that it happened,
That's
I guess.
Disappointing.
Kind of. But I think he probably comes back, so maybe a later interview will happen.
Uh-huh.
And we'll get maybe some more meat or something.
Are we talking accent? What kind of German accent? Like heavy German accent?
Quite.
Okay. Interesting.
Quite.
How does Alex handle that?
It's not as disruptive as it could be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that where he learns his future Soros accent from?
No. Mm. Although one caller in this episode did talk about going to
This is me, George Soros. I'm calling it the info.
Alex, is your refrigerator running? That's the root of the Soros
beef. Yeah, that's what it is.
Soros prank called
Soros prank called him in 2003.
There was a caller who brought up that he was at like a meeting of the Sun Microsystems people.
Okay.
And as we know, Alex has a big lie about Bill Joy, the head of Sun Microsystems, and his article, Why the Future Doesn't Need Us.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm getting a feeling that maybe this caller is part of what Alex builds into that conspiracy.
No shit.
But it didn't really have much overlap.
Ah.
Just that he was at a Sun Microsystem meeting and they were talking about like microchips.
Right, 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 right.
Putting them into fish.
Sure.
It does not have as much overlap with the Why the Future Doesn't Need Us conspiracies.
I mean, and those fish didn't even have human eyes yet.
Mm-mm.
They were
not sad.
Yeah, they were happy fish eyes. Mm-hmm. They hadn't turned into sad human eyes yet.
Yeah, so we got one last clip, and it's a caller who they're having a great time with, and then it turns bad for me, but it doesn't for them.
Okay.
Let's talk to Clinton, Missouri. Clint, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'd just like to echo what your last caller said. Yes, go back to Lincoln and also recognize that Hamilton and Clay also wanted to centralize the government banking and whatnot. Lincoln's the only one that got accomplished because he did it by the barrel of a gun.
Well, they tried to assassinate Andrew Jackson 7 times, the British banks did, didn't they, Hutton?
I never heard 7, but they got him once nearly.
But I'd also like to add that the only way this government will be fixed, if you will, is you're right, by secession, and that must start with state sovereignty. Could I give you my organization's website?
Oh, no.
Oh, sure. Plug away. That's what we do.
Okay. It's League of the South.
Oh, no.
www.dixienet.org.
Oh, no.
And read about secession.
All right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
The League of the South is a group that is interested in redoing the Civil War and having the South secede. However, they're also interested in creating a white nationalist state out of what happens after secession. They're a widely recognized hate group, and for a short while they were included in the incorporation that was known as the Nationalist Front. This was a group that also included the Klan and the outright Nazis Vanguard America. The Nationalist Front was an attempt to bring all these scattered white supremacist groups who were pushing for an ethnostate together so they could be under one banner and get more work done. Unsurprisingly, that all happened just after Trump got elected, and they were the most, biggest thing that you probably have known their work from is the White Lives Matter type messaging.
Sure, sure, sure.
That people were so thrilled about.
Great.
Typically, they've been more of a white supremacist / segregationist group, but they also dabble quite a bit in anti-Semitism. In 2018, their founder, Michael Hill, posted this on social media. Quote, "The Jews' claws are sunk too deeply in the United States for her to survive in her present form. We must have an independent South to rid our part of the earth of this pestilence. There must be no Jew influence on our new nation state. That is the foundational concern that must be taken care of before anything else. This independent South will once again be a white man's land."
Sure. Sure.
This is a group that Alex is letting his caller promote with no pushback at all. This is what Alex promotes. By having Hutton Gibson on and saying that he's accurate about everything, Alex is begging his audience to go find out what Hutton says, which will then be read with the listener knowing that what they're reading has Alex's stamp of approval. It's legitimately impossible to go back to this period of time on Alex's show and not recognize that he's pushing his audience toward a very extreme sort of ideology and ideologues. And I personally don't think it's an accident. You can't convince me that Alex doesn't know what the League of the South is. He loves secession, and he's bragged in the past about being Confederate royalty. He knows who this group is, and he's fine with promoting it. He doesn't jump in and say something like, hey, secession's fine, but those people are racists and Nazis. Or if he wants to keep on pretending that right-wing racists and Nazis don't exist, he can just say that they're secretly feds or something like that. Yeah. It's so easy. He doesn't do that. Because he's into the his audience joining the League of the South. Because the League of the South pursues the state of affairs in the world that Alex wants to come into being.
Yeah.
It's just kind of that simple.
Yeah, I mean, the dumb part, the dumbest part, the overwhelmingly stupid part of this idea of secession and so on and so forth is that the reason that the South was able to secede and do what they did was because they had free labor from slavery.
Mm-hmm.
If we had a white nationalist movement, secession, or whatever right now, and they got their own little country or whatever, they would rapidly discover that most of our lives are built on the backs of everybody but white people.
Even beyond that, I mean, I agree. There's an element of that. And then beyond that, well, I mean, I think that they would still find a way to try and enslave people.
See,
again.
That's the problem.
So, I mean, I think that even if they recognize the reality of what you're talking about, they'd find workarounds, as it were.
Exactly.
But the other thing is, like, even just broader picture, they'd very quickly realize that there are trade embargoes that would probably happen. Like, no one is probably going to want to get involved with being export-import partners with the white nationalist breakaway state.
Yeah,
of the
I mean,
United
I
States.
Think it's American Rhodesia and then Brexiteers and the end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, American Rhodesia, Brexiteers, and Russia could probably form a new BRICS.
I don't know. I think they might not even want to get involved.
That's possible.
I mean, it's just from a functional standpoint like that, it's yeah. just silly.
It is absurd.
Yeah. But
it's absurd.
The silliness is also, you know, not to be obscuring the hatefulness.
Sure.
And the severe shitheadery that's behind this.
Yeah.
And that Alex is, like, it's almost impossible to look at the behaviors that are demonstrated on this episode and not draw the conclusion that Alex is hoping that his audience will look into the League of the South
yeah.
and learn more about them, look into Hutton Gibson, learn more about his anti-Semitism, and internalize these things.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
Yep.
He's like this, and he's always been like this.
Yeah, and you know, it's just that it fucking works.
Mm-hmm.
It fucking worked, you know, like you, it's not a, obviously it's not a direct path and obviously it's not him by himself, but right. it is that concept of like, here's what you could do in the early 2000s. You could put a full blown Nazi on your show and you can be like, as long as we don't say the shit that is Nazi shit.
And as long as you're not aesthetically a Nazi.
Yeah.
You know.
Then you see that ball, that snowball rolls downhill.
But why,
we are at the big snowball.
Jordan, yeah. why can't.
Yeah.
A Nazi talk about secession on the radio freely.
He's
not talking about his Nazi things.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the reason that he wants to secede is that he believes that the Jews are trying to make a one-world government and have their claws in the U.S. government. In
that's
a way
right.
That, so I guess it is kind of behind every single thing that he says, even if it isn't overt.
Yeah. I would say maybe motive. Motive is something that we should consider in whether or not somebody succeeding from the Union is on the up and up.
Yeah.
Yep.
It would be helpful.
It would be.
So we got a little bit of a shorter episode. Mm-hmm. I blame Jim Baker.
It is his fault. Again.
Once again, so many things come back to Jim Baker. yeah, his fault. I spent too much time watching that TMT episode. And I had a bit of therapy yesterday.
Yeah. yeah.
I had therapy and then also a psychiatrist appointment. So
you're good.
Limited my time.
We got three this week. You're good.
Sure, but I mean, this is just Hutton Gibson. We're not even listening to Andreas von Bülow. But granted, if I had all the time in the world, I still wouldn't cover that Andreas von Bülow interview. If everything was going my way, if I had a machine that stopped time and gave me all the time to prepare an episode ever, von Bülow's still getting left out.
If your therapist was like, the only way for me to treat you is if you listen to this von Bülow.
No, I mean, listening to it's fine.
Oh, okay.
I did listen to it.
Okay, fine.
I'm just not covering it.
Yeah, never mind.
If that was payment.
Right. I'm getting a new therapist.
Couldn't do it. Deal breaker. So we'll be back, Jordan,
indeed,
on Monday with mm-hmm. another episode. I had an idea.
What's
I thought
that?
About this.
What are you thinking?
I actually haven't pitched this to you yet, even, so this is fresh, exciting on-air content.
Right on the air, yeah.
I'm thinking maybe starting on episode 800, I'm going to start using social media.
We've been down this road before.
Have we?
Yeah, you tried the Instagram for a good week and a half, 2 weeks.
I can't remember to take pictures of things.
Yeah, I know. That one's tough.
But also, here's the problem.
You're not a poster, Dan. You're not a shit poster. What would you do on social media?
Well, but see, I wanted to take pictures of these books of the library and stuff.
For sure.
But then I'm seeing some of the titles of these books and some of the pictures on them. I don't want to post this.
Yeah, that is... Your feed is just a series of Nazi books.
Yeah, out of context, this looks terrible. And so,
Dan advertising for all the Naziest Nazi books that you could have.
Yeah, it's completely crippling.
That is.
There's no way to.
That's
do
an
this.
Unfortunate side effect.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Fine, I'm not going to start posting.
I'm not telling you not to.
Fine.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll be back.
Okay. With a sullen Dan.
But until then, we have a website.
Indeed we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
Might start posting there. After
might do it.
Who
might do
knows?
It. Right away. Right now.
We'll find out. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark.
Woo, yeah, woo, yeah, woo.
Forgot to scat.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.